It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard around the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host Mark Young, and I was surprised to hear that someone in Idaho, who's a close friend of a friend of a friend of mine, got all excited.
Mother's cousin's neighbor's roommate.
Exactly. Right? Got all excited because they followed me on Twitter and listened to Blunt Force Truth, and everybody in the family was aghast. But the husband and wife both were just over the top.
Well, Chuck, I've got a statistic for you.
Okay.
You now have a 1 in 3 odds of committing suicide if you actually know the Clintons.
You know what? It's just, it is staggering when you start to look at the people. It's like 40-some people who've died mysteriously or by suicide or just disappeared or were shot or whatever, that have all been connected to the Clintons. I'm not sure you can say that about any. I don't think you can say it about me or you. So what is, I mean, that is just amazing. I went through a list yesterday. It was like 45 people or 47 people.
I've known 4 people who
a bunch of 11 bodyguards, by the way.
Yeah.
11 of their bodyguards.
I know a lot of people, and I have known 4 people over the course of my life who have committed suicide, which I think is probably on the high side. It's already making me question being a friend with me, but
yeah,
but 50 people.
It's crazy. It really is. And then they try to, the other thing is that the mainstream media, they're just so far off. They are a bunch of kabuki, crazy lunatics. I mean, no wonder they're losing all these people. They're not paying any attention to the media anymore because they're just lunatics. And A.M. Joy and Fredo Como and Fredo was just off the
Well, what's his name on. Now? Who's Beavis and Butthead? Scarborough?
Morning Joe? Yeah, it's the Russians did it to Epstein.
This is typical Russian.
It's just, I mean, just the conspiracy. You know, the weird thing about it is, and I don't know whether you paid attention to this or not, but the left cooks up one conspiracy after another, and then the media just runs with it. And then they blame Trump or they blame us or they blame the right wing, whoever, for being so conspiratorial. It's just the projection is just off the hook.
Well, Joy Reid says that A.G. Barr whacked him.
What?
As I said, well, I mean, Scarborough says the Russians got him.
I think you and I tweeted out the same thing at the same time. I just happened to see yours, so I thought, well, you know, he either saw mine or he thought the same thing. And that was, who was the first person that came to mind when you heard about Jeffrey Epstein? And it was Bill Clinton. That's the first person that came to mind.
I've had 10,000 responses to that, and 99% of them are Clintons.
Well, yeah, but if you listen to the media, you would think it was Trump.
Well, here's what's interesting. Twitter allowed Trump body count to trend on Twitter after Epstein got killed,
but didn't allow
Clinton body count to trend.
Yeah, I know. So I did tweet it out, but they wouldn't trend it, you know.
So listen to this. This is somebody contacted us.
Yeah.
This is somebody, you know, Chuck and Mark, I want to let you know I created a new account for Twitter. About 5 minutes of having this new account, I clicked on and liked a comment by Chuck. My account was then locked and suspended. What? Goes on to say, once his account was locked 3 times, once for following Chuck, once for following Mark, once for following Blunt Force Truth. Then he got locked out again for following Ben Shapiro.
Hmm.
Then he got locked another time because he displayed a picture of a robot clicking on conservative people. I don't know what that means. And then he got blocked again for liking a comment by Chuck.
Holy cow.
I then appealed the action because they are requiring my phone number to reactivate my account. I refused to give it to them. It should not be a requirement since they already have my email. Love your podcast. Big fans of you guys.
That's amazing. You wonder how much this happens. I mean, I'm up to over a little over 600,000 followers now, and I spend most of my time going down reading responses to certain tweets and everything, and then blocking all these guys who are just nuts. And you wonder how many followers you probably would have. I had no idea that was going on. And if that is atypical of what's happening, obviously we're on their radar.
I have an issue with my account that I will randomly literally be on my account and 300 followers will just vanish.
Really?
And then people will tell me that I was following you, but now I'm not following you. They actually disconnect people who are following me. Well, just randomly.
Tech is just, obviously it's not freedom of speech. It Google and all of these platforms are not even close to freedom of speech. They don't want it any more than the Democrats want it, you know. So it's what we're up against. I don't know how you legislate that. It's got to be a government fix. But dear Lord, I mean, the government can't fix anything. Which brings me to this. All I'm hearing are red flag laws, red flag laws, red flag laws from Republicans and Democrats alike. Some Republicans, not all of them, but all Democrats. And in the wake of these mass shootings, which are horrible, obviously, they're talking about closing down loopholes in private gun shows.
Transfers,
like
yeah.
That. Yeah, transfers. And yet no gun has ever been used that we're aware of that has been purchased at a gun show.
No, you're right. It's meaningless.
It's meaningless. So gun-free zones, we've talked about that till it's in there. This is the target, but they won't do anything about that. It's so obvious and so easy, but no, that can't happen. They're not going to get away with or do away with gun-free zones. So they come up with red flag laws. Now, let me tell you what this reminds me of. A red flag law, and I may have this wrong, so correct me if I am. You're usually more current on this than I am. I call someone in the government, whether it's local, state, federal, and I say, I got a friend. His name's Mark Young, and he's acting really crazy, and he has a bunch of guns. And he's
so far, you're accurate.
And he's nuts. He's done so and so and so and so, and I make all kinds of claims against you that aren't true. But to me, because you disagree with me or I disagree with you, they're true to me. That's my truth. And so the government says, really? Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to check up on him. So they go check up on you, and what they do is they don't ask you anything. They go in and collect all your guns first. They come to your house, knock on the door, collect all your guns, say, do you have any guns? Yes, well, let's have them. And then they start to investigate you. Am I even close?
Yes, and there are some states with red flag laws, and they have failed in those states.
But doesn't this remind you of communist China and communist Soviet Union and all this? I mean, it's like
sure does.
You tell on your neighbors and you disagree with a neighbor, you don't like them for some reason, so you accuse them of something, and in this case, it would be going insane or being crazy or erratic behavior. And then you sick the law on them? I mean,
we have two models of this to already know what will happen. The first model is Child Protective Services.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers of false reports that are reported by Child Protective Services by angry relatives, angry spouses, jilted lovers, whatever the case is ridiculous.
Right.
The second one that we know is personal protection orders that are abused and filed by spouses that are angry.
Yeah, my husband's after me and whatever, we're separated right. And blah, blah, blah.
But here's the thing with this, Chuck.
Or my wife, you know, a knife to me.
The ability to do this exists. Mm-hmm. It already exists. So if I went to court and I said, Chuck Woolery is a dangerous person and I fear he's going to do something wrong to me,
mm-hmm.
I could file a personal protection order. A judge would hear the case, and a judge could order to take your guns away.
Yeah, well, that's like.
But he listened to the case first.
Yeah, that's far more complicated than just calling somebody in the government and have them show up your house.
But that's the problem. These laws will be so abused. Think about. So first off, You know, well, from reading Twitter that somebody on the left thinks that you and I are crazies because we own guns.
Well, how about they think we're crazy because we disagree with their ideology?
Right. So to them, they would be calling us in now.
Right.
Saying, have you looked at these guys' Twitter accounts? They're crazy.
Right.
Yeah. They're dangerous.
So one of the reasons for this is that we know that these people are insane that commit these mass killings. They have to be insane. They have to have a screw loose someplace. And so people always come out of the woodwork later and say, well, you know, he was an odd student and he kind of held in, came back and stayed by himself and he didn't like anybody and nobody liked him and he was abused and he was, all this stuff. So they always say this and then they don't hold anybody responsible for not coming forward saying this stuff. I mean, the guy in, what was the case? Was it Virginia? That the kid was just nuts and everybody knew it. Oh no, it was in Parkland, Florida. And the sheriff knew it. He'd been reported 15 times. Nobody did anything about it. So now all of a sudden we're going to use red flag laws to overcome this inability of people telling on you, which they did with him anyway. And it didn't do any good.
Well, everybody
from the schools to the police, to the sheriff's department, they all knew about him and they didn't do a damn thing.
We know, you and I already know, because we had an FBI director on who explained to us that what happened in Parkland was the fault of the FBI and what Obama did to the FBI, because Obama took the consumer tip line offline, took it off the FBI agents and gave it to basically a telemarketing operation in Mumbai. Yeah. Otherwise, we would have had FBI agents at that guy's house.
Mm-hmm. Well, but
a red law, red flag law wouldn't have fixed that.
So even here's the problem, Mark, that I see, is that Congress can't fix anything. They never fix it. They screw things up. They don't fix things. They're notorious for it. And so we're depending on government to come in and fix these people who are wackos, and they get guns in their hands and they get them legally. So you can't really, get them there. And it seems like every fix they have is not a fix for anybody. It's just to make them feel like they've done something and to say to people, well, we passed this legislation and so now you're safer. When in fact, you're not any safer than you were before.
The way we can be safer is to eliminate gun-free zones.
I know, but you try to get a politician behind that one. I mean, any of them. I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat. Nobody's behind that.
The president has talked about it before.
Well, but he's not a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah, good point.
As we well know.
But getting rid of gun-free zones would be the best move we could do. We have more guns than we have people. It is impossible to go around and collect up all these guns, even if we made guns illegal.
Well, I know. So what's all this conversation? I mean, it dominates radio and television for 2 weeks after something like this happens. And it's just a round robin of people pointing fingers and Trump did it and all of his people are angry and they don't like immigration. They never mention that it's illegal immigration. It has nothing to do with immigration. They've conflated so many things and twisted so much stuff that you just wonder what the heck the public is, what they listen to, what they hear and what they believe. It's amazing to me. I will hear conversation after conversation about how we're all racist. And the reason we're racist is because we don't like brown skinned people and we don't like immigration. And it virtually has nothing to do with it.
Well, now you're a white supremacist if you're white.
Well, I know. That's all you got to do is be white. Something you can't control or have no control over because it's melanoma.
But if you're melanin, but if you're Rosanna Arquette, you feel deeply guilty
for being white
and ashamed of your whiteness.
I tell you, it's
now
weird.
If you can be ashamed, you're
living in a wacko world.
I'll tell you what I think is going on. When you look at all the hatred for Donald Trump, mm-hmm. So does the president go after people and insult people? Yeah, he does. And sometimes I wish he'd back off of some of that stuff. But the results he's getting are good. Now, here's what I think is happening, Chuck. We've been on a 100-year window of progressivism and liberalism.
All right.
Woodrow Wilson to now, right?
Well, actually, Theodore Roosevelt till now, but go ahead.
And it's funny, as you and I have talked before, you look at Woodrow Wilson, who was then preceded after about a year by Silent Cal.
Right.
Now we have Barack Obama, who is the black Woodrow Wilson, preceded by Donald Trump, which
FDR in there. FDR is
right. But he's now preceded by Donald Trump, which is anything but Silent Cal.
Right.
But similar philosophies.
Exactly.
And
Jimmy Carter, followed by Ronald Reagan.
I think what
you had a picture of Silent Cal on his wall. Yep. Nobody knew who he was.
Because he was silent.
Because he was silent.
But I think what we are seeing right now, and this is not just in America, this is around the world, we're seeing the death of the Democratic Party and progressivism as we know it. And I think this is the reason that the people are getting so crazy. The people on that side.
Do you see these people in Hong Kong singing our national anthem?
Right.
Word for word?
Guatemala just is electing a conservative. Conservatism, socialism is dying around the planet.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you study Karl Marx, and I have, the one single thing that you have to get rid of in order to be a successful Marxist, which is basically socialism, as a fascist is basically socialism. I always love it when the left says, well, you know, you call us Marxists, but you're fascist, but they were both socialists, so we're nothing like that. So the one thing that has to be missing, the one thing you got to take care of, do you know what that is in order to succeed?
Well, I would say you've got to get rid of the middle class.
Exactly right. You have to get rid of the middle class. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to tax them out of existence.
Yeah, because you need the elite, and you need the great unwashed.
And you claim that you're going after the wealthiest people, and you're going to tax them, but you always, 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 they lump in that middle class, and they're the ones that really get smacked. And eventually, you get rid of them. They just become, you know, they can't graduate into the upper class as far as money is concerned, and they just slowly disintegrate down to where they become the lower class.
Well, I think the reason we're seeing the left get so violent and get so crazy is because through Donald Trump and his recognition of what is happening, as we've discussed before, his understanding that Bretton Woods is over, that America is exceptional, that we literally control everything in the world.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he knows it. Mm-hmm. And he's decided we're going to make decisions that are right for us, mm-hmm. that we've been the world's piggy bank for 75 years since Bretton Woods, and that those days are done.
Hey, this whole thing with the legal immigration, making people citizens who are on the dole, I mean, he just popped that bubble. And, of course, we've had that for over 100 years, and he just revived it.
Right, and now he's being called racist for not wanting people on welfare.
Exactly.
But the bottom line is...
But people on welfare depend on you and me and all our fellow citizens who work for a living
right.
to support these people. And it used to be, if you came to this country, you either had to know someone, have family or whatever that could support you while you got on your feet here, or you had enough money to take care of yourself for a certain amount of time.
I think the reason they are getting so crazy now, Chuck, is because we are threatening their very existence and their way of life.
Well, I personally think that they've always been this crazy, and Donald Trump has the ability where no one else could do this. He's the only one that was able to do this, and he's done it in both parties to a certain extent, but mostly in the Democrat Party. And that is, he knows what the switch to flip is to trigger them.
Well, Trump can start an argument in an empty room. I mean, he just knows what button to push on everybody.
Well, that's the point. He pushes their buttons where nobody else would push them. Of course, that makes him not presidential.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means, right, yeah.
So was Jimmy Carter presidential?
What?
Was Jimmy Carter presidential when
he was pretend? Jimmy Carter, I'm not even sure what Jimmy Carter was. The man who loved every dictator in the world. He was different.
But remember, every time a camera came on, Carter would carry an empty suitcase around to show how he was playing. Yeah, Carter used to carry, you would see him get off the airplane carrying his own suitcase.
He was a man of the people.
Because he was a man of the people. But nobody knew the suitcases were empty.
Yeah.
It was just an act.
Isn't it all just
an act?
And
then he'd have the fireside chats wearing his little brown sweater like Mr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was just plain folk.
Boy, I tell you what, I have to admit, you know, as old as I am and as much as I've seen, I have never, ever seen anything like this. I've just never seen anything, and I'm not sure we'll ever see anything like this again.
I think it's the end of socialism, Chuck. Look at Guatemala. Look at Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
That just got put in. He's like a British Trump. He's even got the hair.
Yeah, I don't know. Boris Johnson, from what I hear, is kind of a mixed bag. Farage is unbelievable.
I'm telling you, socialism is on the ropes right now.
Well, it should be on the ropes. I mean, it doesn't deserve to be, you know, in the forward-thinking mind of anyone who has any sense at all. It just amazes me that it gets the traction that it gets. And the only reason it's got any traction at all in this country is because of these Marxists who are teaching in universities and colleges and just indoctrinating our kids. And they come out, they don't know anything. They really don't even know what socialism is, right? Most of them.
And we're threatening their way of life. One of the things that's going to grow out of this is we're going to see the advanced education system collapse. Because universities, if you look at universities, when we educate people, we're educating people based on a European model of education.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed?
That's true, yes.
Now, why was the United States made? The United States was created to be the anti-Europe.
Right.
But we brought the education system with us. Now we have people who are fighting to try to make us back into Europe. And that's not going to happen. The reason these professors are fighting so much is because we're going to see alternate routes of learning, alternate routes of creativity, alternate routes of being qualified for a job. Because we're going to start getting to a point where instead of looking at how many degrees somebody piled up, we're going to look and say, how many accomplishments have they piled up?
You know, I thought of something. Bill Maher was on. I watch him occasionally just to see how crazy you can really get. And he was saying, what we really need in this country is a good, solid recession so that we can get rid of Trump. In other words, screw the American people, screw the economy, anything to get rid of Trump. And I thought, how American?
I'd like to introduce you to a new type of podcast. And by new, I mean there's never been anything like this before, not in terms of scope or ambition. The show is called Living Beyond 120. Science proved that lifespan could exceed 120 years back in the 1960s. And the Bible first mentioned living to 120 years 6,000 years ago in the book of Genesis. But the question is, how do we get there? Living Beyond 120 tries to answer this question. The show is an exploration into human longevity and what it will take for us to live longer, healthier lives, featuring interviews with some of the most respected minds in longevity science and tackling big subjects like how the medical system, big pharma, and maybe even our own government don't want you to live longer. Living Beyond 120, it's hosted by me and my co-host, medical expert, Dr. Jeffrey Gladden. You'll find the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast directory, and you can also listen to it at the website livingbeyond120.com. Well, Chuck, what I'm saying is I think the entire education system it's not only is socialism on the ropes, but the education system is on the ropes.
Yeah, I don't think people know that, though. I really don't. I don't think the average person really knows that or why yet. They may in the future, but I'm not sure they're thinking about our education. I mean, look, you have the government who stepped in, and now they're supporting all these student loans. Kids can't buy a house till they're 45 years old because they have so much debt. And they've got these degrees that don't mean anything, and they can't work. It's just insane what our government has done to our educational system.
I had a guy on Twitter last night.
In the name of education.
Who I was just torturing on Twitter. So this is this guy. He's probably 35 years old. Mm-hmm. So he's 35, 40 years old. He's calling himself part of Youth for Bernie. Okay, I got news for you. You're 40 years old. You're not part of Youth for Bernie. Yeah. And he's holding up a sign on Twitter. And the sign looks like it was written by a three-year-old. The sign's illiterate.
Is it in crayon?
Pretty much. And he says, I'm supporting Bernie Sanders because I had $137,000 in student loans. And 4 years later, they're now at $175,000. And Bernie Sanders will give me free education. Here it is. I support Bernie because he's fighting for free public education. I have $150,000 in student loan debt and understand the value of a more affordable system. Youth for Bernie. This guy's freaking bald. Okay, he's not Youth for Bernie, but at any rate, and my point is,
thank you for just, you know, throwing our guest under the bus before you even introduce him.
No, but I'm saying you're not.
Man, there's no hair.
But you haven't. But he's by on purpose. You're not bald at 20 years old. Mm-hmm. Okay, this guy is not 20. He's not Youth for Bernie. Yeah. My whole point is, first off, if you've got $150,000 worth of student debt and you were stupid enough to spend it on a degree that did not give you an income to pay it back, then shame on you. Secondly, if you've got $150,000 in student debt, guess what? You were living on student loans and you weren't working while you were in school. You were not only using those loans to pay for tuition, you were using them to live on. It's not my fault. Well, Chuck, we have an expert who's going to talk to us about education. And this is Nicholas Giordano. He is a professor of political science at Suffolk County Community College, which when I was in college, I always fought with my political science teachers. But we'll see how that works out. Nicholas, welcome to Blunt Force Truth.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, Nicholas, when I was in college, we didn't have political science. In Kentucky, political science was a shovel.
In a lot of ways, it still is.
Yeah, right.
Just the shovels required.
Yeah.
So, Nicholas, what do you think of this guy? This guy's screaming that he needs to support Bernie Sanders because he deserves his $150,000 in student loans. Here's the best part. We know this guy doesn't have a degree in economics because he says Bernie is just going to make it vanish.
Well, he's part of a problem of the education system, and we've seen a total collapse within the education system. Anyone that has any common sense should know you should be looking at a career and then determining how much student loans you should be taking out. I could guarantee you that this is a person that probably majored in, you know, some type of Caribbean studies or women's studies, and that's why he can't find a job, and that's why his debt is so high. There's no fiscal management, and the financial aid system, all the financial aid departments, they encourage students to take more than they really have to in order, why don't you live off this money, buy all your textbooks with this money? And that's why the debt balloons so high, because mm-hmm. they take the maximum amount of student loans that they could take. They graduate not within 4 years. Usually it's about 5 years. And then they come out with $120,000 student loan, and they're working as a store clerk in a Target or a supermarket or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And they can't buy a house.
No, they can't. Well,
I mean, my first house I bought at 21 years old. And my kids are all in their 20s, some in their 30s and 40s. I have one child who owns a house, one, and she's in her 40s.
Well, it's much more difficult today because, one, they're coming out with these student loans that are astronomical. Then they never really learned how to fiscally manage themselves. So usually they'll also have a nice expensive car payment each month. Their car insurance will be high. They have the cell phone bills, and they have all these added monthly bills. They want their Netflix. They don't want to sacrifice anything in order to hit the ground running and start to save money in order to purchase a home.
You know, that's a very interesting word that you use, sacrifice, because there was a time when a certain discipline of your life was you. I remember when I lived in Nashville, I made very little money, and there were lots of things I wanted, and I just couldn't have them. And I had to sacrifice those things for the things that I had to do in order to make a living. And it seems like that has just kind of gone out the window, that no one sacrifices anything today. And I don't know whether that's just a generational thing or whether it's just me because I'm older, looking at it, wondering why don't these kids understand that you just can't have everything.
It's the entitlement culture. It's the entitlement culture where the new generation, so your generation had to sacrifice, and it wasn't necessarily by choice. It was difficult times.
No, it wasn't really.
Whereas today,
you had to do it.
Well, think about it. In the 1950s, I mean, having steak once a month was like a luxury. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, older generations, my father would eat anything, liver and onions he would like, you know, and he'd eat those things because it was the cheapest part of the meat, and that's what he could get. In today's day and age,
liver and onions, we used to have it once a week. Oh, that was horrible.
Absolutely. But the new generations, they get everything, and they think they're entitled to everything. I mean, look at poverty today in the United States. You have 90% of people having two cars. You have 92% having gaming systems. No one has problem putting food on the table each and every night. Now, there are children that do go to bed hungry and malnourished because of poverty, but that's actually extremely rare. I mean, nobody dies of starvation in the United States.
You know, it's odd, Nicholas, that you bring this up, because when I went overseas as a young man, I went to places like India, and I mean, I saw real poverty. There was no question of what poverty was. And we aren't, real poverty to us is having a dish that doesn't work.
I mean, Chuck, we measure our poorest people in America by their obesity.
We're not even close to the poverty of the world. I mean, it's not even, I mean, we're so rich. We have so much, and we so demean it. I tell
my students that they hit the lottery just by being in the United States. You hit the lottery right off the bat. Right. And it's not to diminish anyone's problems. There is, you know, alcohol abuse in families and drug abuse. Right. It's not to diminish the problems. But it's not a daily grind of survival here in the United States on an everyday basis. Where around the world, in many places, it's about survival. I mean, imagine living in Syria where it's the July 4th each and every night, only it's not fireworks, it's bombs that are exploding.
Right. Mm-hmm. And kids in dumps trying to, you know, stay alive in third world countries. I mean, it's just even the Philippines. I mean, you see these hundreds of children going through garbage in dumps trying to survive. I mean, that's real poverty. I mean, good night. What we talk about is poverty is just not even close.
No, I've watched it. I've spent time in Guatemala watching little three-year-old kids crawling on the garbage heap at the end of the neighborhood looking for things to eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the older generations in our country have much more grit than the newer generations. And I tell my students each and every day, you know, when we look at education, because that's a perfect example, why do the people in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s no more than the students of today? And when we look at the people in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, a lot of them dropped out of school. They dropped out in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Many of them never finished high school. And yet they have more of a basic knowledge of everything than the students of today who go to school for, what, 15, 16, 17 years. They're in school, and yet they know less. I mean, my students, the first day of classes, I give them a citizenship exam. And I have
the same one that somebody would take if they were trying to become a citizen?
Correct.
Okay.
And out of 235 students each semester, I'm only going to get 15 that are able to pass it. That same day, I give them an assignment and I tell them to read the United States Constitution. Only the Constitution I give them is really the Russian Constitution, and I replace Russia with United States everywhere and Duma with Congress everywhere.
Is that the 37 Stalin Constitution?
No, it's the 1991 or 1992 Russian Constitution.
So just when the Soviet Union collapsed.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, in the Russian Constitution, it talks about people's rights. It talks about labor benefits and personal benefits that you would get and social safety nets. It talks about all these things. So they have to read it. Then I want them to write a paragraph or two referencing the document about what they thought about it. In the next class, we'll have a 45-minute discussion on the topic before I break it to them that they didn't really read the United States Constitution. They read the Russian Constitution.
Now, how many people identified that it wasn't our Constitution?
less than 10 out of 235 each semester.
Wow. God, this is pitiful.
Less than 10. And after shaming them, because for 45 minutes we discuss it, they're all into it, giving me their thoughts and opinions. Then finally I break the news that I lied to them and that I deceived them. The look on their faces is priceless. It's great because they actually do realize that they know nothing about the United States. They actually, at that point, know more about Russia than they do about the United States. And if they actually read the United States Constitution, they'll learn pretty quickly that when you look at Articles 1 through 7, there's no talk about freedom. There's not really talk about liberty. It's not about personal rights. It's simply an instruction guide to how our government actually works, how our government operates.
Right. I always try to get people to understand our Constitution is an operating system.
Absolutely. And that's the perfect way to explain it. Because that's exactly what it does. It illustrates how our system functions. And I tell the students, because everyone has opinions in this day and age. On any topic you look at, everyone has opinions. And I ask them, well, how can you say government should or could do anything when you don't even know how the government works? You don't know the roles and responsibilities of the branches of the government. You don't know the institutions. So how can you say our government should do anything? And it is eye-opening to them. I do reach some of them by doing that exercise.
I am amazed how many people on Twitter will attack me saying, oh, if you don't like socialism, then why do you have local police and schools and roads? And it's like, oh my God, can you not identify the difference between a federal government and a local authority?
No, because they've never been taught. Most of them have no clue the concept of federalism is all about. They don't know that there's a difference between the federal government and the state government. They don't realize that the main function of government, period, is to keep us safe, to protect us, and to allow us to exercise our individual liberties. They think that government's there to take care of all their needs. That's why you always have a knee-jerk reaction to get the government involved when something goes wrong. We see a mass shooting, well, then it's government's responsibility to fix that rather than say, hey, what's going on in our culture that's leading to these types of mass shootings? If there's, you know, a bad accident somewhere, well, then it must be government that could fix that problem. It's not the driver's fault anymore. It's government's fault.
When these students read the Russian Constitution and then the U.S. Constitution, what percentage of the students think the Russian Constitution is better?
Here's the thing. I teach at a community college. And so the class of student I get is much more in touch with reality than at the elite universities. So my students are probably 50% Democrat, 50%, 40, 40, 20, 40% Democrat, 40% Republican, 20% independent. So you don't see the socialism push as much on my college campus as you do on the university's college campuses. And I think that it illustrates, you know, when you look at these four-year institutions, you look at the cost that they generate, well, that's where you see the idea of socialism being indoctrinated on the youth. And then the K-12 system has just completely collapsed because they've chosen to focus on a multicultural approach when it comes to American government and history. They rather focus on the global community as opposed to the United States, because the theory was that they'll live in the United States, and so they'll learn about the United States simply by living. I'm shocked at how many students never read the Constitution by the time they get to my college course.
I think
tell you
most
what,
people haven't.
I didn't read the Constitution until I was in my 70s.
That's shocking to me.
And here's another thing. I grew up in the 50s. I went to high school, graduated high school in 1959, so I went to college in the 60s. We never, I don't recall anybody at the University of Kentucky or at Morehead State University, where the two different places that I went, discussing politics, ever. It wasn't on anybody's mind. It wasn't in anybody's class. I don't recall anything, and I'm well aware of what I was taught and how I was taught by the professors that I had. Some I liked, some I didn't, but never even discussed politics. It was never discussed on campus. This whole thing kind of erupted out of the late 60s. And that's when all of these Marxists started getting into our colleges, universities, and stirring the pot and starting all of this leftist kind of ideology and promoting it. And then it grew in the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, and now it's just it's just insane what goes on in our campuses and how much people don't know anything. I was very disturbed. Mark knew this. I was very disturbed later on because I'm kind of a student of history. I like it. And I was really disturbed with myself how little I knew with the level of education that I had. And I finally started re-educating myself just because I wanted to learn, what, 10 years ago, Mark?
Right, but the desire to learn is what made it different for you because had the desire to learn it.
Well, I was so upset that I realized I didn't know anything that I was on a rampage of learning everything I possibly could.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. You did kind of swing for the fences all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, I wanted to know what the heck I was talking about.
I want to ask Nick a question. So, Nick, I was teaching a business class in a community college here in the Detroit area. And I want to see if you see this with your students. So I had a class that was a Saturday morning class. And first off, nobody showed up for class on time. Then as they would drift in, I'm starting the class and we're talking about some basic things in business like markups, margins and markups. And I realized after about 15 minutes into the class that my class didn't know how to use a calculator.
I'm not surprised.
And I had to stop the class and say, okay, let's have a calculator class. Is that an unusual experience or is this a typical experience?
It's the norm. And I'm teaching things in my American government class that I shouldn't have to teach. They should already come in. I shouldn't have to tell them that there's three branches of government.
They should have learned this in high school.
Absolutely. I shouldn't have to tell them what the checks and balances are. These are all things that they acknowledge they should be coming in with, and they're not. And one of the scariest statistics was a Wall Street Journal poll that found only 38% of graduating seniors each year, only 38% can actually read, write, and do math at the college level. Most of these people going into college don't even belong in college because they don't meet the proficiency levels in college.
Have you ever asked these kids if they're even interested in the news or where they get their news, or is it all TMZ and Extra and Hollywood and fashion and music and things like that? Are they even interested in the news?
Some are, but part of the hard part with today is that you have an overtly advocacy media where everything's biased.
Okay? I know that.
So everything they watch taints them, and they get a lot of information from social media. And rather than push back and ask questions, all we do now is accept it and just regurgitate what we hear. And that's part of the problem that I try and fight back with my students. A good example of this would be when I'm talking about slavery. Most of them have no idea that the Founding Fathers put a provision in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, stating that slavery can be outlawed in 1808. Most of them have no idea that exists. And so when I bring up slavery, I say, well, 1/3 of the Founding Fathers had slaves, 2/3 did not. And when we talk about slavery, it's more complicated. It's not that every American actually agreed with slavery. There was actually a big debate when we were setting up this country about what we should do with slavery. Thomas Jefferson, he was a slave owner. At the same time, while he was in office, he championed outlawing the slave trade. He was the one that pushed to make the slave trade illegal. And yet today, people make it as if slavery is black and white, no pun intended on that, but they make it as if it's simple. The Founding Fathers were racist, they were all slave owners, and that's it. There's no question about, well, were they slave owners? And they don't push back against it. And this is the thing. If year after year, you're going through an education system that's only pointing out the bad of the United States, the bad things that we've done, like Jim Crow and slavery and segregation and the Japanese internment camps and the Trail of Tears, well, you're not really going to have a favorable opinion of the United States. And that's what
those
we're
starting to say. Those were all things, by the way, just to interrupt you, those were all things done by Democrats.
Correct.
You know, there's a piece on Prager University, which, you know, Twitter hates, and so does Google, and so does every other
YouTube.
There's a black professor, a woman at Vanderbilt University, that does the a story of the Democrat, the history of the Democrats, in like 5 minutes. Have you ever seen it?
I've never seen that one. I have watched some of Prager's stuff.
The Inconvenient Truth About the Democratic Party. It is astounding. When you watch it, I mean, number one, it's beautifully done. And she just goes over every single point that leads us up to today that students have no clue. They have no idea who the Democrat Party are, what they were born out of, how they started. She was talking about this switch that they keep talking about, that that all those Southern Democrats switched to the Republican
Party. The Dixiecrats.
There were two senators. That's it.
Yep.
Two senators.
It was called the McGovern Doctrine. It was a marketing ploy.
Just amazing how little we know.
Well, but that's the thing. How can you appreciate the country you're living in if you know nothing about that country? I mean, if we really are honest about the education system and we're honest about our society today, America is a stranger in most people's lives. They know nothing about America.
Professor, let me point something out to you. I do another podcast called Living Beyond 120, which is I host with a doctor. We find that the majority of people know more about the apps on their phone than they know about their own body.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You ask a kid today anything in pop culture, they'll be able to answer it in a second. You ask them just a simple question about our government, they can't answer it. You know, another thing I do with my students, see, I love to torture my students. Once again, I do believe, I believe in shaming. From the first day I tell them, I'm going to offend every single one of them at some point. I wouldn't be doing my job if
He's the Chuck Woolery of college professors.
Right. That's an honor to be called.
Somebody said, how do you pick your friends? I said, I pick people who are not easily offended because I will offend them eventually.
Well, absolutely. But that's part of life. I mean, listen, you're never going to go through life without being offended. And I tell this students that the real world, I mean, go tell your boss after your boss reams you that you want to go to your safe space and see how long you're going to have a job after that.
Okay, and take your anxiety puppy with you when you do that.
Exactly. I try and introduce them to the real world. And so one of the things I do is I'll tell them, if you could have any president be president today out of all the presidents besides President Trump and President Obama, because they're the two most recent, who would you pick? And they'll all write it down on a piece of paper. I'll make them pass it up. And then I'll write the names of the presidents that they pick on the board. I'll write the names down. And I didn't even look at their papers yet. Once I go through the papers, I'm almost dead on with the presidents. They only select seven different presidents, which, you know, your Teddy Roosevelt, your Franklin Delano Roosevelt, JFK is a big one, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln. Those are the majority of presidents they pick. And I'm like, we have 45 presidents, and you're picking only six or seven out of 45. And then I'll ask them, why'd you pick George Washington? Well, he was a great general. Well, that doesn't mean he was a great president. What did he do as president?
So was Eisenhower.
Absolutely. Look at JFK. I mean, JFK only served, what, 2 years in office, you know, before he was assassinated? What makes him a great president? Most of them.
Well, because he was a Vanity Fair cover type president. That's why. It's Camelot. I mean, it's really what it is. It's that culture of the time. It's culture. It has nothing to do with what you accomplished.
Now, by the way, if you asked me that question, I'd probably pick Calvin Coolidge.
Silent Cal was a great one.
And I would probably have Ronald Reagan on my list.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it is those are two conservative presidents of the modern day within 100 years, okay? That's about it.
My other one would be Thomas Jefferson, of course.
You can't really find any conservative presidents with the exception of Calvin Coolidge, Ronald Reagan, and now Trump, which was a surprise. Everybody thought he was a Democrat, including me, and he's probably more conservative than Reagan was, which is really just almost punishing. I mean, I can't believe it.
Well, his record is proven to be more conservative, actually.
So you talk about over 120 years or whatever, and you've had three conservative presidents as opposed to all these other liberal progressives. It's amazing we've actually survived as long as we have.
Well, and look at the terms. Look at how the economic conditions were under those presidents. Look at the general nature of world politics under those presidents, where there was peace and stability that existed. And that's the amazing part. Okay, you look at these successful administrations and to find only two and a half, I'll say, because President Trump isn't done yet, to find only two and a half of them in our history is truly astounding.
And so many Republicans who they say were conservative, who were not conservative at all, which, you know, that's one of the most things that drives me crazy is,
well, that's because
conservatism is totally misrepresented in the media.
Well, it's misrepresented, but Republicans are also scared. They don't fight for the idea of conservatism. You know, take the whole Nazi argument. people will say Nazis are right wing. Well, no, actually, if you look at conservatives, conservatives believe in small, limited government, where Nazis actually believe in totalitarianism.
Well, how about just they were socialists?
I mean, absolutely.
The Nazis and communists had everything in common. They really did, except one was nationalist and the other was worldwide domination.
Yeah, globalist versus
fundamentally
local.
Everything else, they were the same.
But remember, these university professors have now changed the definition. Okay,
yes.
Where Nazism is socialism and part of socialism, they now changed it and tried to attach it to the far right. And that's the problem. The left controls the narrative. Look at Ilhan Omar.
Look what's happening with Trump and Epstein right now. I mean, it's like they're desperately trying to not connect Clinton to him and connect Trump to him. I mean, this is what you hear just ad nauseum 24 hours a day on cable news.
Well, look at someone like Ilhan Omar. If you criticize her, you're going to be labeled a racist and a bigot. Yet, it's okay to criticize government. I criticize government each and every day, and I bash Congress regularly. That's my job to do
that. Exactly.
And I enjoy doing it. But I don't criticize America and the idea of America, where that's where she attacks. She attacks America. She attacks the United States. And yet the media will sit there and say President Trump is racist for criticizing her. Meanwhile, she's criticizing our way of life. And that's where the left controls the narrative. And every Republican, President Trump is the first president to actually take on the media head on.
Right.
And to take on opponents head on. And he's not afraid to say it. And I think that's why a lot of people respect him.
He literally pushes their buttons every day. And he has no fear of it because he doesn't care what the press says about him.
Well, they're going to say it anyway.
This is one lesson Republicans just can't seem to learn. They want to be beloved by the Democrats and beloved by the press, and they will bend over backwards to do it and lose their spine, lose everything.
Well, but Trump understands the adage that it is better to be feared than liked.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he took Machiavelli's rules, and he understands it. Listen, the world loved President Obama. How did that work out for us?
Yeah, right.
They loved President Obama.
Well, but most people would say it worked out great. They loved him. I mean, why would they do that? Because we can look at his record, it was just a total wreck.
But they'll say it worked out great and they love him. But if you look at the facts, he put the red line in Syria. After he didn't follow through on that red line, well, Russia started taking over the Crimea. China became more aggressive. Iran became more aggressive. Venezuela became more aggressive.
Well, to quote a famous politician, we accept the truth and we believe in the truth, but we don't believe in facts.
No. Well,
Joe Biden's
never
won
for facts. But that's
just by the way, Biden also remembers when the children from the Parkland shooting came to the White House to him.
Mm-hmm. When Vice President Pence was there.
Right. Biden had been out for 18 months, but he remembers when the children from Parkland came to the White House and he talked to them directly.
He must have seen it on CNN.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you look at it, the reality doesn't match the rhetoric of the left. It just doesn't. It doesn't exist. The world hates Trump. That's why a country like China doesn't want Trump to win the election. Well, think about that for a second.
Yeah.
If China doesn't want President Trump to win the election, that must mean President Trump is doing something right. Mm-hmm. If Russia doesn't want President Trump to win the next election, I know he's supposed to be
a Russian asset, plan, right?
But if they don't want him to win the Russian, the next U.S. presidential election, that means he's doing something right. I mean, that's the whole point of international politics. You don't want a leader that the rest of the world wants because you want a leader that's going to fight for your national interests. We're in a global competition.
Are the average person, I mean, I'm always fearful of saying this because then I get surprised by the American people. They make wise decisions. Has the ability of just deductive reasoning just completely escape? Does it escape us? We don't have the ability to do it. We don't think critically. What?
It's a difficult question. I would say that we have lost our ability to think critically. Mm-hmm. And I see it on a regular basis just because of my job where
Why
students.
Why do you think that is?
Because they've been taught how to take tests, not how to think. I mean, listen, I know that when I give my students the Russian Constitution, as I alluded to earlier, I know that some of the stuff to them sounded funny. And I know some of them probably thought to themselves, I know for a fact they did because they told me, this doesn't sound right. You know, it doesn't sound right that they would be talking about pensions in the United States Constitution in 1787. That just doesn't make sense. But they didn't question it. And the reason that they didn't question it is because their professor gave them assignment.
A voice of authority gave them assignment. That's what they went to the authority. They took the word of the authority.
Exactly.
And so mainstream media is their authority.
And all they had to do was take a 2-second Google search to type in one or a lines from the Russian Constitution, and it would have come up that it was the Russian Constitution. I said, your assignment shouldn't have been 2 paragraphs. It should have been just one sentence. This is not the United States Constitution. That's what it should have said.
I've seen statistics, by the way, that show that this generation, this younger generation, is the most compliant generation in the history of America.
You're starting to sound like Aristotle now.
Well, it's obedience. I mean, sure. Let's face it. If you want power, the way to acquire power is to silence opposition, which you're seeing that with the big censorship movement. It's to sanitize your history, which we're seeing by getting rid of statues and George Washington murals, and to make the people compliant to obey what the elite ruling class tells them to do. That's so why
Nicholas,
they're trying
would you
to control
say,
language.
You were talking about how two generations back, a lot of people may have left school in the 8th grade, 9th grade, something like that. Would you say that somebody in my generation or Chuck's generation that left school at 9th or 10th grade had a better education than a high school graduate today?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. There's a reason for it, because you got two educations. You got your street education, and you had some academics where you could at least read, write, and do the basic math that you need. And so it was a different time back then. Like I said, life was much more difficult back then. You didn't have all these excesses, all this stuff. Today, we basically told the newer generations, and I blame the hippies because I think it started with the hippies.
It did.
And we said,
I was there. I wasn't part of it, but I was there, right in the middle of it.
But when you look at it, every generation prior to the hippies, it was about the next generation. Then the hippies came along and they said, well, it's about us. And if our lives are better and we're happier, then our kids' lives will be better and our kids' lives will be happy. Then we transitioned into the whole, every child is precious. Well, no, they're not. They might be precious to you. I mean, my kids are precious to me, but they're pain in the butts to other people. Well, they're pain in the butts to me too. But when we're looking at it, we put the kids on a pedestal. And then we told them that the more stuff you acquire, the more materialism, the more success you have. And we equate stuff and material goods for happiness and success. Well, it turns out the younger generations are much more depressed, have much more anxiety, and essentially they don't have a sense of purpose than previous generations, even though they have more stuff. So all this stuff hasn't really made us happy now, has it?
Well, you know, this is one of the great lessons of Hollywood, of great fame, great success, lots of money, and you commit suicide.
Well, and
it happened all the time. You know, and people are depressed and they're terribly under, you know, they just can't get their lives together. They have everything that you could possibly want, and it's not enough.
Except for the real human connections that you need for survival.
That's right. Yeah.
Human beings are relatively simple, but we're losing that human to human connection because of all the technology.
So many friends that I've had that were gazillionaires. I mean, they made so much money and they're flat on their back. They got nothing. Their lives are ruined financially. They've ruined themselves financially. They've gone through everything they have. And they're the same age I am, and they have nothing to show for it except a memory.
And that's it. And that's it when you think about it. And now we've become a Hollywood culture. I mean, let's face it. Most of the youth today, not most, but a lot of the youth, they want to put on YouTube videos and become famous for that. I mean, there's a whole gaming industry. I don't understand it, because to me it doesn't make any sense, but you have people making millions of dollars playing video games. Now, I could understand the video game developers making millions of dollars.
Right.
But I got an 8-year-old that thinks like life's about playing games and they can make money off that. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen in this household.
Now, I've got to believe you being a conservative in a college, you're about as welcome as Cleavon Little at a KKK convention. So
talk about putting it in perspective.
So how does that work out for you?
Well, I know a lot of conservatives hate tenure, but this is one of the beauties of tenure, that you can have a conservative at a college.
They can't fire you.
Exactly.
Make your life miserable.
We do have something called academic freedom. I have to say, my college, Suffolk Community College, is actually a great college.
And it's probably a little bit different community college level, I would
think. It is.
Yeah.
Everyone knows where I stand. Everyone knows that I'm conservative, and nobody's ever tried to push back on me, tried to get me in trouble for any reason or anything.
And I bet
like
you don't
that.
Push at them either, do you?
No. Well, conservatives aren't like that. And that's the main difference between the far left and conservatives. Mm-hmm. Conservatives will debate you on ideas, and at the end of the day, they'll respect your point of view. They may not agree with it, but they'll respect the point of view. Whereas liberals, they become rabid. And they start attacking you personally as a person. You know how many left-wing people I have encountered that they'll start off the conversation talking about how moderate and how open-minded they are to other people's viewpoints. And then the minute I disagree with them on something, they'll just start attacking me. And I sit there, I thought you were so open-minded and moderate. Meanwhile, how could you be a professor and actually believe that President Trump put in good policies or whatever it may be?
I mean, when we talk to a progressive or a liberal, our kind of goal is maybe we can change their mind. When they talk to us, their goal is they want to eradicate us.
Correct.
Well,
so how do you have a conversation like that?
There's an interesting thing. These people wake up at war every day. They're really they're in a war room 24/7. We're not.
No, we're not. And my students, most of them, don't even know where I really stand on the issue unless they listen to my podcast and hear me on the outside. When I'm in my classroom, if you take a conservative point of view, I'm going to challenge you with a liberal point of view. If you take a liberal point of view, then I'll challenge you with a conservative point of view. And I'll play both sides.
On your podcast this week or whenever you do it, what's your topic? What kind of topic would you have this week?
This week, I'm probably going to focus on China just because one of the things I like to do on my podcast is focus on the real issues that the media doesn't cover. The media likes to focus on gossip. That's all things that will never change anyone's life.
I have tweeted that out more than once. It's just a gossip society.
That's all it is. It's President Trump put out a tweet, and you would think like President Trump is the only thing in the news that's important. I mean, I've never seen coverage like this in my life.
It is to them.
But they focus.
We were talking before you came on about Joe Scarborough saying that Epstein's death is a typical Russian thing. It's the Russians because this is typically Russian. How's that a news guy?
Well, he's not a news guy, and journalism doesn't exist. I mean, let's be honest here. Journalism is dead. It's been dead for a while, and you actually have an advocacy media that exists now that's nothing more than an extension of the Democrat Party. That's all it is. I mean, think about it this way. If I say that the bureaucracy did not want President Trump to win the election, and so the bureaucracy violated numerous rules and procedures and potentially broke laws to try and take down a presidential candidate and then later on a sitting president, then the media would label someone like me a conspiracy theorist, that I'm a tinfoil hat wearing person. Meanwhile, the media have been pushing this Russian conspiracy narrative for 3 years. It's been totally proven false. And there's so much more evidence to support what I say than what they say.
And they're still pushing it.
They still do. I mean, Adam Schiff, Congressman Schiff had the nerve today to put out a tweet talking about President Trump fostering conspiracy theories about the Epstein death. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Well, this coming from the guy that says he has more than circumstantial evidence about Russia.
But the interesting thing about this is that the projection and hyperbole on the left is just incredibly off the hook. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And everything they project onto Trump or to his followers or to Republicans or whoever's available. They always do it. They always get away with it. And the reason they get away with it is because they've got a compliant media that backs them up. Without it, they would look foolish, even though they look foolish anyway.
They should be held to the same standards. I mean, over the weekend, you had Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Warren pushing the false Michael Brown narrative.
You're right. I saw that. It's amazing.
Yep. Now, that fosters racism, and yet nobody's going to call them out as racist. They'll call President Trump when he takes on Elijah Cummings out for the condition in Baltimore.
And yet, hands up, don't shoot.
Exactly. Has a totally false narrative.
Never happened.
Hands up, don't shoot is like the mythical unicorn. It never happened.
Yep. Try to convince somebody on the left that it didn't happen.
So your podcast, what's the name of your podcast now? It's the PASS Report?
The PAS Report. So Politics, Analysis, and Strategies. The PAS Report. And that's, we focus on the issues that the media doesn't talk about. I bring
Nicholas,
facts,
I really figures. Like you. You're I would love to be in your classes. You're a great guy. I would love to have you come on our podcast, you know, anytime you want. I hope you'd be open to that because I just think you're a wealth of information. You're reasonable. You're smart. I just love to share your ideas with everybody.
Absolutely. And you'd love my class. My students do enjoy my class. Liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, most enjoy the class.
So how can our listeners find your podcast?
They could go to iTunes or Google Play. It's in the podcast store. Or they could go to thepasreport.com and get it right there. And on thepasreport.com, I link to other articles. Sometimes I'll write articles myself. Also, I'm on Twitter at PAS Report, so they can find me on Twitter at PAS Report, where I'm constantly beaming things out there.
I will go and follow you on Twitter now and do the same, and we'll keep retweeting you. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Works for me. I also follow you guys.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, I'm the one that can't spell and I use no grammar, but people understand me.
I know, but they need to put an edit thing in Twitter because there's been times where I'll put out a tweet and then I'll look at it and be like, oh, man.
That's not what I said.
Yeah. And you have to be careful because in 160 characters, liberals have a hard time interpreting things. They don't know, they can't read sarcasm or anything.
You know what? They have no sense of humor at all. None.
No.
They're devoid, which is what's wrong with all the comedians today. They're not funny anymore.
Well, they're not. The ones that, I mean, listen, being a comedian, you're supposed to be pushing the boundaries. You're supposed to be politically incorrect. And they took the fun. They take the fun out of life. Okay, now, I want to make it clear. I'm not comparing liberals to the Taliban. I am not. But the Taliban just outlaws everything fun in society. Movies, music, anything fun they take away. Okay?
Well, you know who I would compare them to that I think is legitimate? Compare them to Iran.
It's a good point.
They're very Iranian-like. I mean, they're like this whole mullah bunch in Iran. I mean, they're really the same kind of people saying the same kind of things, and very much like China, too. They push back the same way.
Because they want to program you. And see, that's where you could get in trouble because you're saying that. Yet when President Obama calls conservatives and Republicans, compares them to the mullahs of Iran, that's acceptable. Once again, acceptable political speak. But listen, life is short. Have fun. Politics isn't everything. And I tell my liberal friends that politics is just a part of our life. The relationships we have are much more important than any politics that possibly exists.
Mark got me into this about 10 years ago, and I see you've ruined my life.
I know it. If you think about it, I was thinking about this morning when I was driving in to the studio, and that is, we start off, and I'm going to say all three of us on this show, I start off my morning with what good is going to happen today. I live in a world of abundance and good things are going to happen. And when you look at the Democratic Party, you look at the liberals, they live in a world of disaster. Mm-hmm. They live in this dystopian world where everything is wrong. And when you look at the two parties, you're literally having to make a decision. Do I want to have a future that is bleak and disastrous, and maybe the world ends in 12 years, or do I want to be a part of a group of people who believe that our best days are in front of us and that we have a future? Because that's really what you're looking at when you look at these two parties.
I agree. The only spot I'll disagree with you is the Republicans don't fight, and they don't fight.
Oh, I agree with that.
Okay, so if you look at the abortion issue. Now, I don't care where anyone stands on abortion, but the Democrats, they don't call it abortion. They call it reproductive rights and women's health care. And so Republicans, the second they try and talk about abortion, they're labeled as misogynists. Rather than say, no, let's call it what it is. It's abortion. So we've gotten into this weird place where we're now debating third-term abortions and almost infanticide in certain cases. And we've moved because Republicans don't want to fight.
Well, you're talking about language and how they change the language, which they do. I mean, if you look at our...
But Republicans allow them to get away with it.
Well, if you look at the past 100 years, progressive was huge. The word progressive and progressivism was enormous from the late 1800s right through the beginning of the 20s. And that's at the point where Americans had had enough of progressives. and they didn't want to hear the word anymore, and so they changed their name to Liberal. Which, and they bastardized that name. They're not even liberal anymore, not in the classic sense of the word. So they do this over and over again. And I've said this before, and I don't want to bore you with it, Mark, but I remember the first time I heard the word progressive. I had no idea what it meant or what it was. And it was uttered out of the mouth of none other than Hillary Clinton in an interview when someone said she was liberal. And she said, well, no, I'm really more of a progressive. I immediately went back, looked it up, went to Hegel, found out who he was, and found out who the father of progressivism was, how it affected Marx, how it affected, what's the guy's name in Italy, Mark, that I can never remember?
Gentile.
Gentile, had affected him with fascism. It affected both of those things. All of this control, this whole socialist attitude came out of Hegel.
Be careful with talking about the Italian zoo, because you might wander into
right.
You don't want to be called Fredo.
Get into Fredo. Or Alfredo, and then somebody's going to kick you down a flight of stairs.
But anyway, my point is I had to research the word to find out exactly what the hell she was talking about, because I had no clue. Now everybody kind of knows. I can remember when Rush Limbaugh said, I refuse to talk about and call them progressives. I'm still going to call them liberals. He's now calling them progressives, because that's really what they are.
And I did do the exact opposite. I refused to call them liberals because real liberals don't exist.
Don't.
Real liberals were champions of freedom of speech. They were champions of the freedom to assemble.
Exactly.
Today, it's all about the progressivism, and right. Progressive is supposed to be moving forward, and yet, really, it's about power and control and censorship. Anyone that disagrees with them, they want to destroy. I speak a lot about nationalism and the importance of nationalism, mm-hmm. how nationalism links us together as a society, and how things like Hurricane Harvey are a great example of this, where Americans came together. It was Americans in their own boats during the floodings, jumped on their own boats and helped their neighbors. They didn't say that this is the black boat or the white boat or anything like that. And now they're trying to do away with the term nationalism, and they say use patriotism. Well, if we get rid of nationalism.
Nationalism is fascism.
Absolutely.
They always link the two together, which, you know.
It has nothing to do with race. And how long, so if we get rid of nationalism, how long is it before that patriotism becomes the new racism and that we have to do away with the word patriotism? And that's what they want to do. They want to remake our society in their image.
And there's another thing that's on the rise. It's very interesting. And it started in Europe, and it's in the United States now. And this is whole anti-Semitic thing. I mean, it's going off the rails. It's crazy what's going on.
I had a guy on Twitter yesterday. We were talking about these student loans with the guy with his 150,000 student loans. And somebody,
the bald guy, right?
Right. And somebody jumps on Twitter and says, well, it's the fault of the Jews that are making people loans to trap them. And I'm like, how stupid is somebody? They can't even realize the federal government controls all the student loans.
And the federal government's responsible for the increase in tuition because of those student loans.
Exactly.
Right. But
exactly,
but right. The Jews did it.
Yeah. Well, Maxine Waters thinks that the banks did it.
Well,
and she's head of the banking committee.
Exactly.
Well, listen. And you're talking about students that don't know the Constitution. Congress doesn't know the Constitution.
Congress does not have to follow their own rules, the rules that they make for us little people. I mean, think about it. Charlie Rangel was head of the tax committee, the Ways and Means Committee, and he didn't pay taxes on income he was receiving. And his excuse was, I didn't know how to pay taxes. Yeah. Me, I'd be thrown in jail if I did what he did. Exactly. And I will guarantee you that 80% of Congress, if they came to my class, they would fail the Constitution test. It should be a requirement that members of Congress have to know the Constitution word for word before they're sworn into office.
Well, when you hate the Constitution, why would you need to know it?
That's true. Well, yeah. They hate it because they don't know it. That's the thing.
But even Satan knows the Bible, though.
Yeah, right. That's true.
You got to understand your enemy.
Nicholas, you've been a pleasure, really. Come back and visit, will you?
I certainly will, and I appreciate being on with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Folks,
we really appreciate
make
it.
Sure that if you want to catch up with Nicholas, go to the show notes at Blunt Force Truth with this episode, and you'll find links to his website, links to his podcast, and make sure that you go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Podcast One, and leave us a 5-star review, because that helps us get our show out to more people.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to Blunt Force Truth, and we'll see you next time.